It's time for overtime.
Now that's a tourist attraction.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros.
Toughest son of a gun you ever met, man. That Texas gunslinger ain't gonna let nothing get in the way.
With interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking. Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome into a rain-soaked edition, early Thursday edition of Overtime, but we're not going to let a little rain and a little darkness ruin our day. Our buddy Dustin Baker back in the...
It's so convenient. Sports on the go. Download the free app now. This is ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right, we're for real back this time, officially kicking off this Thursday edition of Overtime. I did say we're not going to let a little rain and darkness ruin our days, but certainly some hijinks from the computer will certainly do here as we crack open this Thursday edition of Overtime. As I was saying before we were rudely interrupted by Mr. Computer in front of me, Dustin Baker is back in the saddle with us on a Thursday edition of Overtime. The latest on the Minnesota Vikings comes into focus. Since we last talked, they got their big offseason priority checked. Justin Jefferson, big-time deal, highest-paid non-quarterback in NFL history. That is not a surprise. The figure's not a surprise, but we'll certainly react to the deal, the overall cap space, what it says about the team right now moving forward into 2024, 2025, and beyond. Also talk Dalton Risner, other new additions to the team, couple transactions within the last few weeks, and so much more. But quickly, we'll go through this scorecard here and then dive in to all of the Vikings talk, all of the international travel talk with one Dustin Baker of Vikings Territory. Game 6 of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals looms tomorrow night. Panthers at Oilers, 7 o'clock on ABC. Oilers are a slight home favorite in Game 6, according to ESPN Bet. Florida paying out plus 105 as a small underdog. NBA Draft is the next event that comes into focus. That's coming up Wednesday and Thursday of next week. Big news yesterday is that the Detroit Pistons let go of someone who could be the future coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Monty Williams let go by Detroit, and Woj says the timing in all of this is the most surprising.
They have really put themselves far behind in this coaching search, put Trajan Lang, their new president, in a very difficult position to start a coaching search a week from the draft, about 10 days from the start of free agency, and certainly for the Pistons, you know, they hit the reset button at the coaching position.
Very weird timing with this whole thing. Monty Williams still owed roughly $65 million. Could be in the hunt as the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. A lot of people were thinking it was Redick. Then it was Hurley. Then it was Borrego. Then it was Redick again. Then it's Monty Williams. Might be Monty Williams. Might be Redick. Borrego's still available as well. Who really knows? We'll head over to our authority on all things Lakers, Dustin Baker, across from the table here in just a second, and get his take, his wish for the Los Angeles Lakers in the future if his boy LeBron sticks around there in Los Angeles. Speaking of the champions of the NBA, that's the Boston Celtics. Joe Mazzulla already has his guys planning for a repeat.
That's all I've been thinking about since the horn went off, is like what type of temperature are we going to set, and how are we going to find that balance of maximizing the opportunity that we have, but at the same time not skipping steps. So like now I'm studying teams that are in that situation, and like that's where a guy like my relationship with Pep is so valuable, is he's won 4 Premier League titles in a row, where like I know every game matters in the NBA, but like every game matters in the Premier League. So like what's the process of creating an environment of that? And there is no guarantees, and I think you have to maximize the opportunity that you have every year, and the type of character and players that we have, you know, I think we'll put ourselves in position, you know, to maximize our opportunity because of who they are. But like that's what I'm studying right now.
That's Boston Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla. Lastly, from the NBA, Evan Cohen was talking up, in any sport that dynasties are good, dominance is good. I'm not sure if I wholeheartedly agree. I love when there's 2, 3, 4 really good teams duking it out. There's some underdogs making a run. But he says whoever ends up on top, it's good when you got a dynasty brewing just like the Chiefs in the NFL and what Boston thinks that they are in the NBA.
I believe that dynasties are the most important thing to the success of a sport. I believe sports are at their peak when dynasties exist. Mm-hmm. If you think about when sports are at their best, you have one team that everyone has an opinion on, that they're either so great, soon to be great, not as great as we think, they need to do more, they need to do whatever it may be. Having a dynasty is vital to the success of the sport. I am so anti the idea of the parity in sports and, hey, we go into every single season, we don't know who's going to win it all. We have no favorites. It could be anybody. I hate that.
It's interesting to talk about, because when your team is a dynasty, you can say, man, this is great, we love it. Or if your team has had a dynasty in the past, you love the dominance, the streak, the ability to compete for a title every year. Parity's pretty fun, though, when you got 32 teams and you feel like teams can elevate. But it's hard to disagree. The line that he said in there that stuck with me is sports are at their peak. And you talk about the NFL was pretty darn good when everybody hated or loved the New England Patriots. And I think that that is missed at times this around this time of the NFL. The Chiefs are now that new team, especially with this last year. Insert the Kelce Swiftie romance. You get that hateability factor of the Kansas City Chiefs out there a little bit elevated. And I do think it's good for sports. Is it at its absolute peak? Is it the greatest? I'm not so sure. I'm a fan of a little bit parity sprinkled in. Big fan, of course, of the NCAA tournament. They give everyone a seat at the table, just about everyone. But you get UConn winning it all back-to-back years. That could be a dynastic time there. And that sport is at an all-time high as well. Major League Baseball Finals, Chicago Cubs got the return of Kyle Hendricks yesterday. First win of the season. He moves to 1-4, still working down a +7+ ERA to start the season. Chicago Cubs get the win 6-5 at home over San Francisco.
Here's a swing and a fly ball, deep right center field off the bat of Swanson. That ball is gone. Back to back. It landed in the basket in deep right center. Dansby Swanson with a home run. Cubs lead 2-0.
Chicago would hang on to the 6-5 win. Other finals, Atlanta over Detroit 7-0. St. Louis lost in Miami 4-3. Cleveland pours it on, visiting Seattle 8-0. The Minnesota Twins looking for win number 7 in a row. Pushed it to extras at home against Tampa, but an error scores a run in the top of the 10th inning. And Minnesota no answer 3-2. Tampa Bay takes down the Twins yesterday. Minnesota with the loss 41-33. Other finals to pass along. Houston over the White Sox 4-1. Rockies over the Dodgers finally. Final score there 7-6. Milwaukee wins over the Angels 2-0. And Oakland continuing a tough stretch for Kansas City. Oakland wins yesterday 5-1. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, we're on early today, which means the Twins are on early. 11:30 pregame, 12:10 the start time. You can also watch the game today on ESPN+. Other notable game tonight, Giants at Cardinals, 6:15 start. That one nationally broadcast on Fox. WNBA final, Indiana Fever stacking some wins now. 88-81 winners against D.C. yesterday. Caitlin Clark, a double-double, and things working in the right direction for Indiana.
I mean, I think it's just this group is, you know, starting to click and build some chemistry, and it's one day at a time. But like I said, everybody loves instant satisfaction. But sure, we would have probably loved that too. But I think we all kept good perspective on knowing we just need to get better at one step at a time, and that's what we're going to continue to do, even though we've won, you know, 3 in a row at home here.
3 in a row for Indiana. They're now 6-10 on the season. Other finals from last night. Minnesota continues their hot start. The Lynx win 68-55 over visiting Atlanta. New record for Minnesota, 12-3. And the Aces take care of the Storm, 94-83, behind 27 points from Aja Wilson. College baseball, Florida beats up Kentucky. They got out to that early start, hung on for the big win, 15-4. In the elimination games later on yesterday, of course, undefeated teams thus far in the tournament, Tennessee and Texas A&M. That would remain the case after yesterday's action. Vols moving on to the College World Series final with a 7-2 win over Florida State. And Texas A&M, for the first time in their history, on to the final, 6-0 winners over Florida. That series, best of three, begins on Saturday, runs into Sunday and Monday if necessary. Texas A&M, Tennessee, 6:30 start time Saturday night on ESPN. Now into our talk with Dustin Baker. Welcome back, my friend. I know it was a long trip, relaxing trip, and a pretty cool trip. Tell us all about it as you're back in here with us once again.
It was a wonderful trip, and I'm glad to be back. Norway exceeded all of our expectations. The thing I posted a lot on social media is there was no downtime in terms of beauty. We rented a car and we traveled, pretty far. We went to Alesund and Bergen, Norway, which were about 7 hour drives apiece from Oslo. Speed limit's tiny, like you're always going about 50 miles per hour, but every time you looked out a window, there wasn't like down spots. If you're a Midwesterner like we are and you're taking a road trip to wherever, Texas or something like that, you're going to have a lot of boring like farmland. And that didn't happen at all in Norway. Every time you looked out the window, there was a mountain, a river, an ocean, a fjord, and it was magnificent. And what the trip did for me, I think I've said on the show before, my ancestors came from Norway, is whenever I thought about that place, I thought about it like a nostalgia 1800s, what my brain conjured. And when I spent almost 2 weeks there, it's like you're living in the future because all cars are electric. It's spotless. There aren't potholes. There's no poverty that you could outwardly see.
Very little stop signs, too.
Oh, right? Yeah. In terms of traffic, it's all about roundabouts. So if you don't like roundabouts here, you're not going to like Norway. Tunnels all over the place. And in terms of how the folks, I don't know if it's because their taxes are so high or what it specifically is, but everything is so clean and it's quiet because there's no gas engine. So I would like to think it's a peek into the future just based on the environmental aspect, but I would recommend it. It's really expensive, so you got to save up. We ended up spending more on food than we did on airfare, if you can believe that. But it was a legacy trip for me. That's where my folks came from in 1886, and so it was really cool to expose my son to it.
And obviously a lot of highlights, I'm sure. You mentioned the food. Depending upon where you go over in Europe, the food's either great, it's okay, or it's not too good. Mm-hmm. It's expensive over there. Was there anything that you particularly enjoyed more so than anything else over there food-wise?
Well, we tried a lot of hacks, if you will. There was a lot of American food, but it was just kind of mid. So if you got a burger, it was very obvious that our ground beef is different, and I think therefore better. Maybe less healthy. Maybe that's it. Pizza was decent, but never great. And the folks that travel with us, my kids and my friend Yannick Eckhart, aren't big seafood eaters, at least not yet for my kids. So we tried to play to the things they liked. And so you end up going to a place that serve burgers. And all of the attempts at American food were, just a 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
So when we finally got down to brass tacks and said, let's just go to these fish markets to try the seafood and these desserts. The seafood and the desserts were really good and kind of their claim to fame. But if you want to go to Norway and get pizza or a burger, it isn't very good. And oddly, like every restaurant had kebabs. There's like a Turkish presence in every restaurant. And I tried to ask a couple of locals about it. And I think a lot of immigrants from Turkey and the Middle East come over and establish restaurants in Norway. And therefore, their little spin is putting kebabs. So it became our running joke on the trips. Like, where should we get kebabs today?
Yeah, good stuff. I know that there were a lot of highlights scenically that you enjoyed. But was there one thing that you keep going back to in your mind, one day, one activity that you enjoyed the most?
Yeah, Geiranger. It's tempting in the English to say it. Geiranger. That's kind of the Irish pronunciation. I think it's Geiranger. Any Norwegians can correct me. But we approached that from the opposite angle in our road trip. So you got to go to the scenic lookout that if you search Geiranger, you'll see all the pictures. And then we went to bed in Alesund and took a ferry or basically a little cruise ship back to the actual fjord of Geiranger. And we got to see it on a boat. And so that did not disappoint at all. All the fjords are so magnificent. They're basically like it feels like the Grand Canyon, but it's green and it has water. But those are just the tip of the iceberg. Spots like that, there are so many waterfalls. They became boring after a while. Everywhere you look, there's a waterfall. It's just kind of their claim to fame. The overall hopping from destination was really sweet because even though there were long drives in between, it was utterly scenic at every stop of the way.
Dustin Baker of Vikings Territory back with us in studio. 10 days in Norway.
Yeah, 11.
11 days in Norway. Back here sharing the news and nuggets from overseas. I wanted to ask you, when you're out traveling, I've never been international. I've been to Canada. So, yes, that's international, but right next door. What is next on the list for you? Do you have any desire to go check out Sweden, Finland to follow up on your Norway trip?
Yeah, that'll probably be... my guess is 12, 15 years from now, maybe when my kids are grown, my wife and I circle back. We want to do a genealogy trip to Norway where we try to find like the grave sites of my great, 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 great ancestors and maybe some cousins and stuff like that. Next on tap is we're going to Hawaii. We've been there before, but one of my close friends, his mother-in-law has a house there and we get to stay there for free.
Wow.
So we're going to Hawaii in August. And then the next on the docket for next summer is Rome in Italy. I think I've told you before that when my wife and I decided about 4 years ago that we weren't going to have a third kid, we had the rationale that it's because we want to travel. If you have a baby, I think most of you listeners know it's tough to travel with the baby. So we said, darn it, if we're not going to have a third kid, then we're going to travel. So that's we put our money where our mouth was, and we've been traveling every summer since. And then to fill the void for third kid, we have dogs. And there's very little delineation between having a dog and a kid.
And I'm certain it'll be a lot of fun moving forward for you. You got Rome, you got Hawaii coming up on the docket. When you were gone, when you were away, I'm sure that you were pretty apprised to the news. Of course, everybody's got their cell phone in their pocket, their little computer with them, no matter where they go. Justin Jefferson's big deal. We'll kind of break down the nuts and bolts and the meaning and the implications, but how much of a relief was it for you to see this get done and go ahead and kick it down to the next objective this offseason?
I think generally speaking, it was a relief just that it's over. I don't have to listen to other people's garbage about, hey, he could be traded to the Bengals. I never had any anxiety at all, and I hope that I hinted that pretty well on this show. Do you remember when the Timberwolves had their first playoff game of this cycle and beat the Suns and Jefferson was there? That's when the deal had been agreed upon. I think he was wearing he either tweeted something or posted something, some Drake quote. That's when the deal was done. And so we basically waited until June so he could have his whole month. What I like about the deal is it shows the commitment to a new leader. In the press conference, he started talking with a verbiage that I hadn't heard before. He said something to the effect of, my team, you know, this is my team. And with Cousins, Jefferson never really came out and said, darn it, this is my team. And in fairness, Cousins never really said that either. That's not his MO. But it was cool to see the baton pass to Jefferson because, A, now the money is there, and then B, he is the guy. Depending on how good McCarthy is, how good Darnold is this season, Jefferson is the leader. And what I love about this contract, it is expensive. What I love about it is it directly aligns with the end of J.J. McCarthy's rookie deal in 2027 or 2028.
Yeah.
And it's cool to know that we'll have a jump off point that if they both click, we'll figure out how to pay them both. If Jefferson's winding down his prime, then we'll keep McCarthy. I like the strategy. We always knew that Cousins was on borrowed time. As soon as Kwesi Adofo-Mensah took over, they gave him a 2-year trial. Kind of worked, ultimately didn't, to the promised land. And now it's Jefferson's team with a rookie quarterback.
Certainly a lot to look forward to. And again, back to that J.J. McCarthy contract talk. If it's the 4-year contract, 2027, fifth-year option would push it to 2028. So that's it. You were right on both accounts there. Certainly other news, Dalton Risner sliding in, a couple bad first pitches at the Minnesota Twins game. It's definitely an off-season storyline. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to get to today. But when it comes to things that you've seen from around OTA, sights and sounds, unpack that a little bit for us. What stood out to you from OTAs? Darnold is going to be the dude, as we say every week here on the show. He's going to be the guy heading into to training camp, to the preseason. You and I are both on the same page, likely to be the day one starter. We'll wait and see there. What has stood out from you from OTAs? Anything else drawing your interest?
Well, I want to say about Darnold, or clarify, is I think it's unabashed that he will be the week one starter. I think we're going to get to a point by early August where we're not even debating who's going to start in week one. That was one of my bold takes about a month ago in some article, that it'll just be a no-brainer that Darnold's the QB1. Here's the problem with that is this guy always wows in spring and summer. This is what he does. He always says, oh my God, this guy looks pretty good. And the regular season shows up and he's either mid or bad. So it's a total wait and see. Of course, he hasn't ever played in a system quite this sweet and personnel this good. So we'll hope that this is a geographical cure that works. The other thing that was really cool is that Dallas Turner, aside from the first pitch of the Twins game, is doing the thing Christian Darrisaw said about 3 weeks ago, that he has a spin move that, you know, put Danielle Hunters to shame or something like that. And, you know, Darrisaw and Hunter are buddies, so there's no reason for him to talk badly about Hunter. It's the early effectuation of Turner being what a first-rounder should look like, because that guy was really expensive for the Vikings. We kind of brushed it under the rug because J.J. McCarthy didn't end up costing three first-rounders like Drake May might have. But Dallas Turner was really, really expensive between mid and late round draft capital. It basically wiped out all of next year's draft. So Dallas Turner, per that price, has to eventually be a Pro Bowler. He can't just be some Marcus Davenport type that you're like, hey, every now and then he looks good. He's got to be really good for the price they paid. And the early signs and returns show that he has that it factor.
And certainly one thing that does play into the positivity at that position on the Vikings that I'm a big fan of, they went out and got some folks. Even if Turner takes some time or is a spot duty, he's the first guy up in a rotation there. They got Van Ginkle. Mm-hmm. They got Grenard in there as well. They have some options for pass rush for the Minnesota Vikings. We'll continue the Vikings chatter coming up next. Dalton Reisner, those first pitches, we'll break them down. It's a non-story, tongue-in-cheek stuff. But again, new additions, couple roster moves this week and more to get to for the Minnesota Vikings. We take the break, back with more of Overtime coming up next. Right here on ESPN Sioux Falls.
College hoops and the NFL and Major League Baseball. It's all here on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Thursday edition of Overtime. We are early. By the way, big opportunity to win looms at the end of the show. We'll hit you with the good, the bad, the ugly, and giveaway time. Fireworks certificates, Pyro Bucks to Pyro City down there, I-29 fireworks exit in T. Also, some free rounds of golf up for grabs to Spring Creek Country Club down in Harrisburg. Your opportunity to win looms later on in the show. We're off tomorrow, so I got to squeeze some goodies in today. We always got good news when Dustin Baker rolls into the studio. Minnesota Vikings movers and shakers, transactions, everything we need to know. By the way, follow along Vikes Now on YouTube, VikingsTerritory.com. Dustin, a couple transactions, couple position moves. Where do you go first over the last couple weeks for Minnesota?
Well, I don't have them ranked in terms of, you know, the punch that they pack, but Jalen Redmond, a somewhat standout in the UFL,
United Football League.
Yeah, was he Renegades?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, he's a Minnesota Viking. It's not like they needed any more defensive tackles, but they have an extra one. He had 4.5 sacks in 4 games in the UFL and somewhat coveted coming out of Oklahoma. Spent the offseason undrafted free agency with the Panthers last year. So he'll be in the mix in a defensive tackle room, which is about 10 people deep. The only one for sure that will start is Harrison Phillips. The Vikings, I think I've said on the show multiple times, didn't do much a defensive tackle. It's just a bunch of guys. So we'll see if Jalen Redmond can make a roster spot to make room for him. They got rid of a UDFA wide receiver named Devrin Harper. We didn't know much about him, but the Vikings still have about 10 wide receivers. One thing in case I forget is while I was on vacation, and since I've talked to you guys, N'Keal Harry, the former first-round pick from the Patriots and a Vikings wide receiver, converted to tight end. And that's another spot where the Vikings have too many guys. They have 8 tight ends right now, and they'll keep 3 plus Hawkinson, who will probably start the season on the pup list. But if you are pro N'Keal Harry, he has a new spot, and he should be considered like maybe a red zone target if he's good enough to make the red.
And he also reportedly was excited about the opportunity to change positions. And after the career he's had, not a knock on the dude, but got to be excited about turning over a new leaf, trying to reinvent your game a little bit, I'd say.
Yeah, and because Hawkinson probably will miss 5, 6, 7, 8 games, whatever it is, they're going to need somebody in an offense with a new quarterback to be greedy in the middle of the field for those targets, because they notably don't have a big name WR3. And that can be Harry, that can be your guy Robert Tonyan. There's a lot of options. A couple of other things. Najee Thompson, this was tucked inside an article by The Athletic, written by Alec Lewis. Najee Thompson, the Vikings special teams gunner and cornerback, he apparently switched positions to safety. That was illustrated by Alec Lewis. And that's noteworthy because now the Vikings have 7 safeties, which isn't good news for Lewis Cine, who's a guy who doesn't need any more bad news. The Vikings turned heads by keeping 6 safeties on the active roster last year. And I guess they could maybe do that again. I don't think they'll keep 7, which would be required if they want to keep everybody plus Lewis Cine and Najee Thompson. A couple of other things. The kicker battle probably won't even be a thing for the Vikings. Will Reichard looked wonderful in spring and summer. And his competition, Parker Romo from the XFL, last time he played was XFL. He looked a little bit more inconsistent than Will Reichard. And it's kind of a no-brainer that Reichard wins the job because he was a 6th-round draft pick and the best kicker in the college class. And then I want to get all Vikings fans starting to think about Christian Darrisaw because everything we just went through with Justin Jefferson, the year-and-a-half-long slog of when's it going to get done, that's going to be on the way for Darrisaw. He's going to break the bank, not quite as much as Jefferson, but probably in the ballpark of Penei Sewell's deal, 4 years and $110 million or something like that. That will be the conversation that if it doesn't start in August or so, when we get to next offseason, he will be due just like Jefferson. And maybe it won't get the sexy headlines because he's a tackle and Jefferson's a wide receiver. But this is your warning. Everything we did with wondering when Jefferson will re-sign for the Mega Bucks, that's going to be around the bend for Christian Darrisaw.
According to Spotrac, Minnesota Vikings have roughly $24 million in cap space right now this year. Of course, some contracts probably still getting finalized, trickling in. I don't know where everybody stands. Has McCarthy and Turner, have they inked their deals? Are they all on the books just yet or still waiting?
No, those two are still waiting. And that's another one that I didn't bring up in my little speech there is there's some, I think Pioneer Press, that have hinted that J.J. McCarthy wants all of his signing bonus up front and that he could hold out if he doesn't get it. To me, that's nothing burger for two reasons, because A, he's already been there for everything, spring and summer, and then B, this is the Vikings quarterback of the future. They're going to figure it out, when, you know, even if it is paying him whatever he wants up front. I thought all the deals were guaranteed anyway, was what I was trying to figure out, but the holdout thing should be considered, you know, a nothing burger.
Yeah, and I do think the reason that the deals are guaranteed, but it's about when you get paid. I don't think the team has to pay you up front the signing bonus. You can spread it out over the 3-4, or I guess 4 years, maybe 5 in this case, but 4 over that time frame. So I think he's just looking for a little bit more up front. And again, I don't know the history and the precedent behind that and rookies asking for that. But I will tell you, in terms of attitude, preparation, and being a sponge, the comment to me that stands out that McCarthy made, can't remember the interview, can't remember the source here, but he had essentially said, somebody said, hey, what are you doing? Where are you going on vacation? You hitting the beach? You going out of the country? He said, you know, I might go play some golf a little bit, but I'm going to be here. I'm going to be soaking up the playbook. I'm going to be learning this, being around the facility as much as I can. Wonderful attitude, I have to say, and an impressive young man so far in terms of what he's saying and what he's doing there in Minnesota for J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, he, like most, could leave and hit Cancun or whatever their favorite destination is. Maybe Oslo, Norway, like me. But no, he's staying there and staying dedicated. I think that's pretty cool. Everything about him in the last, 6-7 weeks since the draft is what you'd want. He looks like a rookie at times, and that's what you expect. That's why Darnold is there to help prop him up and probably start out of the gate. But he's got that infectious attitude, that lovable attitude, and it's cool that he doesn't have to be rushed along. Now, I've said on your show several times that if it was up to me, I would start the guy week one no matter what, because I like how the NFL has trended that way. But it's cool that he is so young and the Vikings have a little bit of a luxury that they seem to really like Sam Darnold, that he doesn't have to do it right away. But yeah, the welcoming party to Minneapolis for McCarthy, I would give a solid A. He's just a cool dude.
As we finish up our Vikings talk, we're going to dive in and be with you nonstop till the top of the hour here on the show with Dustin Baker of VikingsTerritory.com. We talked about the additions, storylines, things like that. The first pitches are a non-story, but what did you make of those? It had to be a little laugh at least for you, right?
Oh, yeah. It was an eye roll, too. I was like, these guys are athletes. And I think Dallas Turner gets a pass because
he does.
His job isn't to throw a ball. But McCarthy, who has a hockey background, so, you know, it's not like quite like a pitcher. He should be able to get it. I mean, I could throw it better than he did. I'm pretty confident I could throw the ball to the catcher and it wouldn't be some big blooper. But at the end of the day, I saw one of my contacts at Vikes Now, Jason Harmon, retweeted something with one of Patrick Mahomes' first pitch and did the exact same thing as McCarthy. So I think it's a good omen now that there's precedent that if Mahomes did it, no, they were both pitiful. Let's not sugarcoat it. Both first pitches were embarrassing, but like you said, who cares?
Yeah, who cares indeed? Typical offseason story. storyline. The one thing I will say about that from the J.J. McCarthy perspective is, again, you go out there, nerves could be a factor, everything else. But again, at the end of the day, you'd like your quarterback to pitch it right down 90 miles an hour and slam into the catcher's mitt. But again, at this point of the offseason, not really as big of a story. My favorite part, though, I got to be honest, watching those videos, Dallas Turner video wasn't the same, but the one that I had put in our article at ESPNSiouxFalls.com was a view from the seat. And you could hear a general moan from the crowd, and that just made my day as a Packers fan, I got to tell you, in terms of the overall, that's our quarterback. Yes, can't wait to see him out on the field. Wide receivers have carried the banner storyline-wise since you exited a couple weeks ago. Brandon Ayuk is reportedly nearing some sort of divorce with the Niners. Maybe they're far apart on value. We saw the Justin Jefferson deal get done. CeeDee Lamb's up to the plate. Jamar Chase is up to the plate. Where do you kind of put this pecking order, and what do you think about this next group of wide receivers that is looking to get paid? And we didn't mention T. Higgins is in there signing the franchise tag with Cincy, so that's good news for them. But just wide receivers, really the story over the last couple weeks.
So the pecking order, I put CeeDee Lamb at the very top. He is so steady and not quite as dynamic as Jefferson, but I think he will get the mega bucks from Dallas. I don't think that's a big of a controversy, and then we shall see how they can afford both Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. But CeeDee Lamb should be, I don't know if he'll be able to top Jefferson's deal. He got lucky that Jefferson went ahead and signed, and so maybe he still can. Brandon Ayuk is kind of a step down, not in a huge fashion, but Ayuk, the 49ers, something's going to have to give, because eventually they'll have to pay Brock Purdy. Debo's getting old. What is he, 28? And I think, to an extent, the Shanahan offense can kind of hum with one, like, ginormous wide receiver. And now they have Ricky Pearsall in there as well. So I would expect either Debo or Ayuk to be traded, probably Ayuk. And then you got to look around the teams that are wide receiver needy, like the Bills, the Chargers, the Patriots, and there's probably a couple others I'm forgetting. Was there one more receiver I haven't talked about?
Not that I was thinking off the top of my head, but back to Ayuk, the thing that stands out to me is I know he's in a really good offense, but when you talk about production, everybody looks at stats, and that might not be the fairest thing, because he's got Debo Samuel and George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey and Elijah Mitt and all these other guys out there. Juwan Jennings is in the mix there in San Francisco as well. So Ayuk's best season was last year, 1,300 yards. That's good on just 75 catches. So 18 yards per catch. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Especially for a guy that's not a blazer, take the top off the defense, known to be a speedster. But just 7 touchdowns. He's never had over 8 touchdowns in his career. He's been pretty non-injury prone, been pretty healthy. If you were choosing, as the Niners, Ayuk or Debo, if that ends up being the choice, I would probably say, as much as I love Debo Samuel and the player, I would probably pay Ayuk at this point due to the youth and the durability concerns.
So would I, and you're going to have to give him a deal similar to Jefferson, not quite, you know, richest in NFL history, but it'll have to be in the ballpark. And the cool part about his numbers that you just rattled off, that 1,300 receiving yards, that's in a run-happy offense.
Yep.
And that's with a lot of mouths to feed in Debo and Kittle. So if I were the GM there, it would be a really cool job. I would send Debo to a team. You're not going to get as much for him because he is 28, probably. What would Debo command, about a third rounder or something like that?
Yeah, depending upon the contract and the numbers and the landing spot, I would say probably third, second rounder. I think, considering Chase Claypool a couple years ago went for a second rounder, I think that Debo could fetch a second, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, so I would, the Bills, notably the Chargers, although I think the Chargers kind of marched to the beat their own drum. I don't think they really need a wide receiver per their estimation. But yeah, there's been those Debo trade rumors for a few years now. So yeah, let's nominate him as the guy who likes to be traded, because Ayuk is really good. He's just not quite in that territory, in my opinion, of Jefferson and Lamb.
Lastly, on the Vikings, I know we just talked about broader NFL wide receivers, but back to the Vikings real quick. We did this with quarterbacks earlier in the offseason before Kirk departed town. I asked you your top 5 Vikings quarterbacks. I wanted to ask you about receivers and where you put Jefferson right now, because it's a really wealthy history for Minnesota. Obviously, Chris Carter, Randy Moss, Adam Thielen is on the list. He's got to be in terms of where he's ended up, 6,600 yards and a total of 55 touchdowns during his Vikings career. You got other guys there, Jake Reed, some tight ends, other pass catchers on the list, Stephon Diggs, Kyle Rudolph, Percy Harvin. To me, as far as a flash in the pan goes, excitement factor, Harvin would be on my list, I guess. Where do you put Justin Jefferson as far as your favorite Vikings pass catchers, tight ends included, running backs? You can throw Jim Kleinsaucer in there for all I care. In terms of favorite pass catchers, where is he as far as your favorite goes? And how far does he have to go to be the best receiver in Vikings history in your estimation?
In Vikings history, so Randy Moss was 98 to 2004 and then came back for a handful of games in 2010. So in Vikings history, he essentially has to complete this next contract at the same pace that he's at, start to step up the touchdown numbers.
Yeah.
He's not quite as bad as Julio Jones when it comes to touchdowns, but Jefferson doesn't score touchdowns quite like some of the Jerry Rices and Randy Mosses. That's the only thing that separates him right now is the touchdown numbers. That's why Jordan Addison was so sweet last year. He scored 10 touchdowns, so he feels like the touchdown guy. In terms of my favorite, nobody will top my nostalgia. Well, you know, when I became a fan in 1996 and then, you know, Moss joined 2 years later. I don't think anybody, even if Jefferson becomes a surefire Hall of Famer and the Vikings win a Super Bowl 2 years from now, I don't know anybody will ever top Moss and Carter for me. And I think if you're doing a power ranking right now, it would be Randy Moss, Chris Carter, and then Justin Jefferson, and then probably Thielen, Anthony Carter at the bottom. But it's not to say that young folks or anybody for that matter shouldn't have Jefferson near the top. It's just that Randy Moss and Chris Carter are so special to me because those were the guys when I became a Viking fan.
Randy Moss was just so electric when he came on the scene, that rookie year, 17 touchdown catches. I feel like it gets lost in the wash a little bit. Chris Carter, nearly twice as many catches in his Viking career. That was longer than Randy's, but nearly twice as many catches, 3,000 more receiving yards, and 18 more touchdown catches as well. Chris Carter, statistically, I don't even know if J.J. will catch him, if J.J.'s there for 10, 12 years, because you look at it right now, just based on who he is, Justin Jefferson has 30 touchdown catches in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Carter has 110 as a Viking. So that's a big kind of line of demarcation, but it's not all about the stats, it's about the impact. So you, for all kind of notes and sake right now, you put JJ third on the list, fourth on the list?
Yeah, if we were going to do this based on Vikings ethos, then Chris Carter probably would be number one based on the numbers that you just mentioned. If we're going to do the top wide receivers, Vikings wide receivers in NFL history, Moss would take the cake, because in most people's GOAT debate, it goes Jerry Rice, then Randy Moss. There's a lot of Vikings fans that insist that Moss is better, but Jerry Rice just has that undeniable longevity factor that cannot ever be refuted. So for me, in Vikings history, probably Carter based on the production, and then Moss was only there for 6 years, and then Jefferson. Jefferson, let's see, 4 seasons. It's way too early for me to say, like, oh yeah, he's already got Chris Carter lap. Chris Carter was fantastic. And, you know, the longevity was there for him too. So I am confident though, putting Jefferson at number 3 right away. What I love the most about Jefferson, I could tell, like, the first few games of his career that made him different than Stephon Diggs. And that's the guy we were comparing him to so frequently, was after the catch. He just never gives up. And with Stephon Diggs, it always felt like Diggs would make a sweet catch, those legendary hands, and just kind of plop down, and that was that. Jefferson, like, flops like a fish until he's tackled. So I think the yards after catch is why Jefferson would certainly top Diggs then and now. And, you know, Diggs is going to Houston and almost going to be the WR3. But, yeah, give me Jefferson at number 3 on the Vikings pecking order of wide receivers.
Pretty good list so far. One other list I need you to make here real quick in terms of quarterbacks that haven't signed their deals. You've got Dak Prescott, you got Tua, and you got Jordan Love. If it were you, and I know you're going to probably throw a little spice in there in regards to Jordan Love, who gets paid the most out of that group and why?
Ooh, boy.
And I would assume they all get done this offseason, but again, I think Miami and Dallas both. Green Bay will get it done. Training camp, and that was publicly by the GM. You don't say things like that if it's not going to get done.
Yeah.
Packers will get Jordan Love signed, and I would imagine it's going to be top 5, top 3 money in some metric, whether it's guarantees, whether it's first 3 years, whatever, for Jordan Love. You can argue about if he deserves it after 1 year, but again, it's not about what you've done. It's about what they think you can do moving forward. Dak and Tua, both of their teams are flirting with maybe testing the waters into the season a little bit, or maybe into preseason in regards to how much they get paid. Dak Prescott, Tua, Jordan Love, who gets the most?
Dak Prescott, because right now he is 30 years old. He has the sample size since 2016. He's really consistent. He kind of falls in the trap of the Kirk Cousins debate that I'm all too familiar with. He's not elite, And I think because he presents himself as really cool, he's paid near the top of the NFL most of the time. We want him to be elite, but he's just not quite that good. So the Cowboys have to decide if they're content with him employing like the 11th best quarterback every year, because that's what I believe Prescott is. I think he, out of this group, would be the highest paid, and it probably does have to be just like Trevor Lawrence's deal, because every quarterback's deal, if the guy is top 12, resets the market. And then Jordan Love, I think the Packers will find a way to get a little bit of a discount so they don't have to pay Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence money. But Love, the problem for the Packers is that Love played too good last year in December and January, so now he'll get his. And then Tua, I really like him and his upside, but I just have this bad connotation with him. I've never seen him lead a really sweet game-winning drive, and I know that's not everything. He's never had a signature moment. Do you know of a Tua Tagovailoa signature moment?
You know what comes to mind for me is not him, but him exiting the game and Ryan Fitzpatrick getting his face turned around and throwing a game-winning touchdown pass. That comes to mind. But Tua has had some small semblances, big wins. I mean, the boat racing of the Broncos, 70 points last year. Yeah. That could be considered, but you're looking for the big comeback wins in Arrowhead, or the big comeback win over the Bengals, whatever it might be. I will agree with you. I don't think Tua has a whole lot of marquee moments just yet in his career. Is he capable? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to keep him healthy. And I think everyone, and myself included, still has this kind of overall aura of Tua as this injury-prone dude because of the injury that occurred in that primetime game a couple years ago, where he kind of got knocked out and had the concussion concerns in the Green Bay game as well, and the game before the knockout game against the Bengals. So I feel like Tua has this little bit of a injury risk label that Dak doesn't have. So that's why I would lean Dak as well between the three.
Yeah, it's mainly Dak because the lifetime achievement, let's call it, and I don't think the Cowboys will be afraid to pay him. But yeah, I really want Tua to have a breakout year. What is he? Was he the 2020 draft?
Yes.
Okay, so the time is now. He's entering year five. We've already seen that he's a really, really good starter, and they can do wonderful things in Miami, but now is the time if he wants to nibble at the top eight and those Justin Herbert types. They need to do more. Basically, the way that I put it right now is if the football game is 27-27, there are 3 minutes left, and the Dolphins get the ball, I don't expect them to win the game. I expect Tua to do something dumb. That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then Dak Prescott, he's had some signature moments in the regular season, but when it comes to the postseason, all bets are off with him, so that's the big concern. I wanted to talk to you about a couple things. We're going to get to two NFL duds, and we're using that with the fireworks theme here because we're giving away fireworks Pyro Bucks, and there will not be duds at Pyro City. Pyro Bucks, $40 certificates coming up in hour number two. Dustin and I will unveil our two NFL dud teams. They could be playoff teams that we think aren't going anywhere fast. They could be middling teams that we think are just going to stink. No matter what, we'll get you our two duds in a second. Couple NFL news things here. Comeback player of the year. I'm kind of happy that they're doing this. They're kind of shifting comeback player of the year away from the Joe Flaccos of the world and the Sam Darnold, who could be in that conversation if this was a couple years ago. The guys who were on the bench or had gotten traded and were left for the scrap heap and come back and have a nice season, they could qualify for comeback player of the year. They're changing it now to mostly injury, resurrection of a career, coming off of an injury. So it had been a mixture of that in the past. But comeback player of the year is going to be shifting heavily towards the injury focus and not the resurrection of a once promising career.
Didn't they just reiterate or reemphasize the already existing definition of the criteria?
Yes.
Okay, so that was their way of saying, like, next time don't vote for Joe Flacco.
Yeah, they're not doing, if Sam Darnold balls out this year, he's not even going to be eligible for the Comeback Player of the Year award. It'll have to go to, I'm trying to think of a quarterback coming off of an injury. Anthony Richardson could be a guy that could win that Comeback Player of the Year award, or a quarterback that got hurt. Even Justin Fields would not be eligible if he leads to the Steelers to the postseason and has a career year, not eligible. It would have to be a guy coming off of an injury that does something. Also could be running back, wide receiver, linebacker, whatever. But they are talking, and this just makes too much sense to me. The NBA has the Most Improved Player Award. Why not just instill that in the NFL, and that way Flacco gets his due, and people deserve that. If Darnold comes out and tosses 30 touchdowns this year, knock on wood, he deserves some sort of recognition for that and resurrecting the career. I mean, Baker Mayfield was a perfect example of that a couple years ago, last year in Tampa. I think that could be an easy solution. The other thing that came up before we dive into our two NFL duds Is there some chatter and some talk among owners and executives and the NFL in regards to splitting off quarterback contracts from the rest of the salary cap? So you've got a quarterback salary cap and you've got a rest of the team salary cap. Are you a fan of that? And I know that quarterbacks eat up a big portion of the cap, and we saw it with Kirk Cousins. We saw it with Aaron Rodgers close to home here. Are you a fan of that, or you just like the way it's been and just continue to let the salary cap creep up year in and year out?
I am always open to change and adaptation. So if I saw the proposal, or I got to read the details, yeah, I could warm up to that. It's always so weird how quarterbacks get paid so much more than everybody else. And I mean, even when you looked at TJ Hockenson at the tight ends contract last year, there was some like, oh man, this guy, they really broke the bank. But then you look at it compared to a quarterback and it's like, God, this isn't that much money at all. Yeah, I would be open to listening to proposals about having a separate salary cap. I've actually thought about this, not for quarterbacks, for how to fix the running back problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because it feels like running backs are being left for dead and they're a vital part of the sport. But because the way that they, I guess, feel expendable now, they don't get paid very much. Remember we had that controversy, was about a year ago, when it's like, what are we going to do about that? I thought about having a separate, like, cap or a separate section for running back contracts. So I'm familiar with how it could work based on the things that I've explored there. The other thing I want to say about Joe Flacco, in case we forget, the other ridiculous part about him, if you want to bend the criteria of him winning comeback player of the year, the guy played 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yep. So you would think that if as a comeback player, you should at least play half the season. They should have that stipulation like the NBA MVP where you got to play a certain number of games. I mean, I really don't care that DeMar Hamlin didn't win the award, but it's kind of pathetic that the guy played 5 games and won the comeback player of the year.
Interesting for sure. Did lead the Browns to the postseason and was a guy that
a lot of people
were saying, is that guy still alive? Is that guy still in the league? Hey, he's winning ball games. Joe Flacco, memorable season for the Cleveland Browns, now a member of the Indianapolis Colts. They could be maybe on your list here. Two NFL teams that you think are going to be duds. They're going to get off the launch pad. They're going to get up there and they're going to go and fall back down for the 4th of July. There will be no duds at Pyro City down at the I-29 T Fireworks exit this year. We got some gift certificates to hook you up with in hour number two. Give me your first NFL team that you think is going to be a dud this year.
All right, so I'm basing this on teams that were good last year. We know verifiably that the playoff field always turns over to the tune of half. So that means half the teams that made it last year will not make it this year. I have the Dallas Cowboys first.
Wow.
And I believe there will be a resurgence by the Eagles. I'm still tormented by how garbage they became down.
Yep, that's what I mean. They were on my short list. I did not put the Eagles or Cowboys on mine. Because I have a lot of confidence in the talent on both the teams, but Philly just feels weirder than Dallas in the way their season ended. So yeah, I'm with you on the Eagles.
So I think the Eagles will be back to normal. That doesn't mean that the Cowboys have to suck accordingly, but the Cowboys really didn't add any new players. They added Kendricks ended up going there.
Yep.
First he went to the 49ers, backed out. And Royce Freeman, that was their free agency. Two guys.
They're all in.
Yeah, their draft was all right. So I don't think that they improve the team enough. We already know what their playoff ceiling is. They're going to lose in the divisional round, even if they are good. And I think that they've had a couple-year run of being really good in the regular season, and I think we're going to get back to what we know and love about the Cowboys, where it's kind of like the Jason Garrett feel, where they're 9-8 and maybe 10-7 optimistically. I think it's time for them to come back down to earth.
The first team for me is not going to be a big flashy one. It's going to be the Las Vegas Raiders. I think that they got their head coach, the right head coach. They've got some weapons. They got two of the better players in the NFL at their positions, Max Crosby, Devontae Adams. I still hold in very high regard. They lost Josh Jacobs. They didn't really address their quarterback need. They got Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew there. The Raiders are the only team that has been able to go toe-to-toe with the Chiefs in any semblance of rivalry over the last 5 years since Mahomes arrived as the starter. But I think the Raiders are not going to be a postseason contender this year. I got them probably around 7 wins, so they're a dud for me. My second dud is a team that I was super high on last year, high on the year before, is the Geno Smith-led Seattle Seahawks. Back-to-back years of 9-8, one playoff appearance in 22, didn't make it last year. Geno Smith is a guy that nobody's talking about as having a big regressive year. We pick apart the stats of Trevor Lawrence. Geno Smith last year had 10 less touchdown passes than the year before, was down 5 percentage points in completion percentage, and had similar interception numbers. I was not impressed with that. That's called regression to me. Sam Howell might have end up being the starter by the end of the year out in Seattle. But I don't see Seattle getting to 9 wins this year, especially with the little bump up in competition. I think the Rams are back, by the way.
Yeah, that coincides with, remember the last time I was on here, my Sam Howell take.
Yep.
That, or maybe it was 2 episodes ago where I said that I believe that eventually he'll take over and we'll see some good things from Howell. My other team is the team that I picked to win the Super Bowl last year, is the Baltimore Ravens. Mm. And I have 2 reasons for this. The first one is just like last season. The Ravens are in the toughest division football, murderer's row. The AFC North, which includes the Bengals, who we know will be at least decent, probably really good. The Steelers, who are guaranteed to be 9-8 or better. And then the Cleveland Browns, who last year had the league's best defense. And we shall see if Deshaun Watson ever pans out. They're in a really tough division. And normally when we size up the really good divisions, there's 1 or 2 teams that tumble or aren't quite as good as we expected. So I think that will be the Ravens, and I regrettably feel that we're due for a Lamar Jackson injury. I don't think it, you know, blows his knee out or anything, but the way that he plays, usually he's hobbled during a season. It was the undoing of their 2022 campaign, and I think that he's hit the time on his internal clock that is exactly aligned with Cam Newton's, where it starts to tumble a little bit because of the way he plays. Not necessarily recklessly, he just plays like a running back at times and you're bound to absorb hits. So I have the Cowboys in the NFC and the Ravens in the AFC.
And I put the Raiders and the Seahawks. And again, a couple of their teams I was flirting with, Jacksonville Jaguars, Tampa Bay Bucks, Cowboys,
yeah, the Bucks
and
too.
The Philadelphia Eagles. There's a lot of teams to choose from this year. Those are 2 NFL duds from Dustin Baker and yours truly. You can find out the work, find the work from Dustin Baker at VikingsTerritory.com. Vikes now on YouTube as well. Until next week, my friend, we appreciate the time as always. Welcome back. Hope you get that internal clock figured out. I know it's always tough when you get back from overseas travel. Thanks for the time as always. We'll do it again soon.
I will get that clock thing. It's tricky when you go the other way. When you go to Europe getting there, that's the tough time to acclimate. But yes, we will see you in a week.
All right, right back to it. Dustin Baker of VikingsTerritory.com. We take the break still to come. Headlines and highlights and so much more. The good, the bad, the ugly, and a fireworks and golf gift giveaway you can't afford to miss before we send you back in early edition of Overtime. Back with more after this.